I want to start off just quickly talking about building this foundation stage. This good level of development actually really gives an indication of where children are when they start their formal schooling. So it's something that happens at the end of the year on. It's based on basically a series of teacher observations. And as you can see from the table, the Isle of Wight has performed consistently well at this measure over time. So children start their formal schooling on the island in a good place. If I now move on and talk about the end of primary education, this is where I think I want to spend a little bit more time. Back in 2016, there was a whole national reset, if you like, with end of national curriculum levels, revised national curriculum content, new hard and more demanding tests. And what we found nationally was the measure, which is called Entry-Rated Expectation, in reading, writing, and mathematics combined. It fell nationally quite simply. It also fell on the Isle of Wight. So I pointed back to 2016 so we can see what's been going on. And nationally, you can see that there's been a 9-point improvement. However, where we are on the Isle of Wight is for me a really disappointing place. We're now sort of 10 points adrift of the national measure. Back in 2017, I thought we were actually going to be really in quite a well place for the 2018 results for sort of two main reasons. First off, in 2017, what we had seen were about 10, 11 schools, if you like, bouncing back from that big drop that happened in 2016. And we got to the point where over half the schools on the Isle of Wight were performing above the national average. And that's kind of like a key indication for me, because once you've got the majority of your schools performing above the national average, that's kind of a really important moment. And the other thing that was making me think we were going to be well placed in 2018 was back in 2016, the local authority had kind of picked up a group of 9 or 10 schools, which were the lowest performing schools on the Isle of Wight, and had been working significantly and intensively with them over a period of time. And we could see that they were getting much better. And in 2018, they actually, as a group, their improvement was 18 points on where they were back in 2016. So I got this sense of a bounce back with the schools, if you like, that should know better, the schools that are, if you like, self-improving, the schools that effort that are kind of like the heart of every local authority. And real sense of impact coming in the schools that we've been working with intensively. So when the 2018 results came in and they were no better than the 2017 results, that was a moment of kind of probably despair for me, because you think, well, what on earth has gone wrong? How can that be the case? And the reason why we haven't shifted on in the way that we should is that of that group of 20 schools, or so, 21 schools, that performs above the national average on the island, in 2018, about half of them slipped. They slipped quite significantly, so it was about 9 of them slipped by about 10% or more. And it's that group of schools that if you like, haven't really embedded changes and the work that they should have done in the bounce back, that sort of fragility around that group of schools. That's one of the components that has made this kind of improvement not quite happen. And the other bit has been around mathematics, which is an issue I'm kind of a lot about, but we've kind of got, we have got work underway around that. So we've looked very carefully about what it is we need to do about that. There are five things that we've kind of got in hand, and some of these I've talked about before, so I apologise for going over the same old ground. But one of the things I'm very keen is for heads to understand that now we are in a world where there are surplus places, and we're looking at surplus places in particular areas in London, that when officers put down recommendations about what to do about those surplus places, school performance is going to be a key metric that we're going to be considering. Head teachers need to understand that what we're about is if children should have some options to get a better deal elsewhere, then those are the sorts of things that officers will be recommending for kind of consultation. We've got a group of schools on the island that are primary schools. It's about five schools, it's school that are in the I'm really pleased that we've been able to win some national resource for that. And we're working very closely with the organisation called Teach First, who as well as doing a lot of work around initiative teacher training, also have a number of highly regarded national recruitment programmes, and they have one specifically around primary schools that require recruitment. It's a national programme, and I'm really pleased that we've been able to win that sort of resource for the island. So the schools get a significant sum of money, they get a significant training offer, they get a level of coaching, and it will actually be from one of the local staff doing the work of Teach First in the school on a fortnightly basis. So that's a real significant investment in those schools that require improvement. There's a group of schools, and this might sound kind of counterintuitive, but there's a group of schools that often are judged to be good, but still have kind of relatively low standards. And there are all sorts of reasons around that. But what we're doing about those schools is we've identified them, and we're providing a significant level of support, rather like we did for those schools back in 2016. And that will be intensive and bespoke to the needs of those schools. There's then that group of schools, which I kind of alluded to previously, the sort of bounce back schools, which as well as bouncing back from 2016 to 2017 improving, then bounced back from 2017 to 2018 and got lower results again. Those sort of fragile schools, the thing that we're doing there, and I spoke in detail about this at the previous meeting a couple of weeks ago, we've changed our annual visit program. So instead of schools on the island getting one visit from the local authority inspector as a kind of health check, we've got a program of almost health checking them on a termly basis to make sure that the key things that have to be embedded are going to be embedded, so we don't get into this situation again. The final thing that we have running at the moment is we were very lucky to win it was about £150,000 grant from DfE to run a program around improving mathematics, teaching them worldwide. And because it's DfE, they're very interested in what's been going on and how it's progressing. It started with year five last year. It's focusing now on year six, so the outcomes of that should be known in this year. The DfE are very interested in it and got quite excited about it. And have kind of strongly evaluated it on the basis of actually what schools have been saying to them about the programme. So that to me, seems to be a well-placed program. It's running across 20 schools on the island, so it is a significant program. Unfortunately, it's only for 1 year. Unfortunately, the DfE aren't at the moment being forthcoming with some money to carry on into year two, but we're kind of on that. Because there's a sense that this could actually crack that issue, which has just been here for as long as I've been working in schools on the island, but somehow maths doesn't seem to happen. It seems to just happen in year six, by which time it's a bit too late. So we've got a number of measures that we're pursuing around primary schools, and I actually feel quite confident about those getting some significant traction in schools and having an impact in terms of improving standards. Just want to talk a little bit now about secondary school performance. And I have to have this kind of chat every year because it has been we are going through, and I'm hoping we're coming to an end of an unprecedented period of change in secondary education, with the way in which GCSE courses are being revised year on year on year. We've had a fresh round of revisions which are being examined for the first time this year. We've got another round which are going to be examined for the first time next year, and then hopefully that's secondary education sorted till the next Secretary of State comes into power, and we'll probably have to stumble over again. But so we can't strictly compare the kind of performance year on year. But the one measure which I think we can get a sense of what's been going on over time is this one called the basics, which is basically in older money, back in 2016, it was the proportion of children who got a C grade in both English and mathematics. Of course, now we've lost letter grades in the majority of GCSE subjects, and that definition has now turned into essentially children who got a 4+ in English and mathematics. And across the island and the country, that looks quite static. But if you look in the paper, the individual subject performance, we've actually got a real success story on the English, which has actually improved across the island against a kind of national decline over a 3-year period. So that English performance now at GCSE is pretty much in line with that nationally. Whilst we have had an improvement in mathematics, and it is better than the national improvement, there's still a significant gap because I can't quite crack why mathematics is such a problem. But mathematics at Key Stage 4 is an issue as it is at Key Stage 2. So we're broadly static, and the reason why we're broadly static is to do with mathematics, but also to do with heads having a clearer oversight of the overlap and making sure that the children who do well in English are also the children who do well in maths. The children who do well in maths are the children who do well in English. It still feels like we've got children doing well in English and not so well in maths, and children doing well in maths and not so well in English. And the idea of the basics is it's the basic thing that all children need to leave school with. So there's some work that schools have to do around mathematics teaching, but also management grip. The other three measures are the ones I always at this point say, well, these are kind of complicated ones to really try and calculate, and I think the only one who actually understands anything about them or pretends to is Nick Gibb, the schools minister, because they are a bit impenetrable. And I've always run away from trying to explain how you calculate them. Well, it's like folks, this is your own right. Because I thought it would be a really good opportunity just to take you through to understand what's going on here, because there's some stuff here we need to understand. And to do that, I've invented three pupils that I've lovingly called people A, B, and C. And what I've done is just set out the courses that they studied and the grades that they've got in those. So pupil A has studied English language, got grade 5, English literature, got grade 4, mathematics, about number 4. They've studied double science, so I've called that science 1 and science 2. They've both got 4s in those. History, they've got 4. Didn't take religious studies, drama got 4, art they got 4, and food they got 4. And food technology. And if you look across, you'll note that basically pupil A, pupil B, pupil C have got the same grades, I've just shuffled them around. So they've got the same average grade, and they've studied, if you like, you know, traditional GCSEs. We all recognise those as GCSEs. Those are children who, because they've got 4s, can all successfully move on to the next step of education. So, in that sense, absolutely equal. But the bit that's tricky is when you actually look at their attainment aid scores, you've got a significant difference between those three children in their attainment aid score. Because to calculate the attainment aid score, you have to look at the best English grade they've got and double it. So pupil A, the best one is 5 in English language, I double it, so that's 10 points they've got in the bag for that. You double their mathematics, so that gives them 8 points. Then you need to take their best 3 EBAC counting subjects. So EBAC counting subjects are science, geography, history, modern foreign languages. This pupil A has got 2 sciences and history, they're all 4s, top that up, that's 12 points, and then basically they have 3 open counting things, which are, if you like, the next highest scoring things, which they're all 4s, so that comes in as well. So if you've been keeping up with me and doing the sums, that's 42. If you look at pupil B, the difference in pupil B is they've got a 4 in English rather than the 5. So when you double that up, it gives you 8. They've got the same in maths, 8. They've got the same EBAC, 12. In the other subjects, they've got a 5 and 2 4s, which gives them 13. So they've got 41 points. Same average grade, pretty much, you know, they'll be getting on as successfully as anyone else, but a different attainment aid score. And pupil C is the really interesting one. Because you double up the 4 in English, you get 8, you double up the 8 before in maths, you get 8. And you look now at the EBAC, the 3 EBAC subjects. The problem with pupil C is they haven't got 3 EBAC subjects. They've got science 1, science 2. They haven't taken history, they've taken religious studies, which is not an EBAC subject. So however well they've done in any of their other subjects, it doesn't matter. They get 8 points for that one, and they get 13 in the other. So there is a 5-point difference between pupil A and pupil C. And that's the dilemma if you're a head teacher. Because what are you going to do as a head teacher around so-called option subjects? Are you going to say, actually, I'm not having any people in my army in my school. You're going to do history and geography. Are you actually now going to say, to make my school look good, what I've got to make sure is children do the right combination of subjects that will make my school look good, rather than children doing the right combination of subjects for them, because those are the subjects that interest them. That's the moral dilemma that you know, schools are now in with the system that we've got around attainment aid and purpose aid. There is a significant element in here that these three measures depend upon the combination as well as how well children do it. And that's a challenge for heads. What do you do about that? You could easily restrict that in your curriculum and make sure everybody does basically all the EBAC subjects, so I know that they're going to score well in those, and the other subjects like technology, drama, art, that bring something to kids, music. These are important subjects. There's a real kind of moral dilemma for teachers around that. I just have an anxiety. It's where we've got to with secondary performance measures now is the school performance measures are different to the things that children need to move on to the next step. And the threat around that is that if I want my school to appear to be it's done well, what I start to do is check the children into doing things that make my school look good. Sorry, I'm going to rant about that. So what? So back on the island, then, if I go through and look at where we are with Progress 8 School, so Progress 8 is if you like, different to Attainment 8. Attainment 8 gives you a sense of, if you like, the average grade children have got across that combination of subjects. Progress 8 is really a measure of progress children have made from their starting points in those 8 subjects. So it's still based on you studying the right combination of subjects. And if you look at the other right, that is a significant negative number. A negative number is bad because it's all done relative to the national. If the zero means you're in line with the national, the progress children make through secondary school is the same as that nationally. If it's positive, they're doing better progress than the national. If it's negative, they're doing worse progress than the national. So you can see there's this negative number. And I'm intrigued by that, because what I want to know is what sits underneath that. And I'm sort of madly got so obsessed that I thought, I wonder, is that about actually school performance and children not doing well in subjects? Or is it something to do with the combination factor that we've got going on here? Because if you've got lots of pupil students on the other point, who are doing the subjects that they're not doing, it's actually not going to help you in the performance table. And so I thought I'm going to go calculating then and look at how many children have, if you like, covered all the right combinations of subjects they need to, and how many children haven't. And on the other right, out of the 1,041 children, 738, if you like, study the right combinations of subject. So almost a third of the children have not. And when you go and sadly recalculate the progress aid for a closed group of 738 pupils who have actually got 6 counting subjects, 3 back and 3 open slots, it comes in at minus 0.04, which is in line with the national. Now, I'm being a little bit disingenuous because I don't know how many children nationally have actually got the full 6 counting slots, but the point I'm making is that on the Isle of Wight, a significant element to the negative progress is around that combination of subjects. And when you look at the average number of EMAC subjects on the Isle of Wight that children have studied, it is lower than the national average is about 2.8, on the other one is 2.5. You've got two schools which are at 2.5. You've only got 2 schools that are on the national average. You've got a significant number of children who haven't studied the right combinations of subjects. That's one of the contributory factors here, as much as the kind of what's going on in the lessons. I really now managed that. So of course Attainment 8 looks lower than it does nationally too, but underpinning that is the question about the combination of subjects. We've come over that dialogue, institutions have had. So you've got to think really carefully about this moral dilemma that you find yourself in. And you've got to really think carefully about, are children studying the right subjects that they should be studying? You know, part of what you need to be demonstrating to us is that your curriculum is right for children. The issue with that is, this data was all based on choices children made probably back in 2015. So the children now are back to 2019, which is the data. They might have made their curriculum choices back in 2016, 2015 too. So there's a real kind of historic element to this. But in terms of what we're doing in the secondary schools, I think we're in a different place now with secondary schools on the island than certainly what we've been since I've been working with schools. Because there is a real sense of the teachers of secondary schools pulling together, wanting to meet together, to work together, to sort some of these things out. And we've been, with the maintained schools, making sure we visit them every half term to really put in a level of support and challenge around management grip, making sure expectations of children, your classrooms are as they should be. And then on top of that, we've got a significant professional development offer that we're ensuring that we draw on when we're working in schools, which has been, I think, for the first time, really well universally supported across the secondary schools in London. So I think we've got a sense of a discussion we need to have with heads about, you know, what is your curriculum, getting your combinations of subjects right, and challenging heads around that to make sure that they're thinking that through carefully, as much as we are around challenging the way of teaching. So to kind of back that up, I'm feeling positive about where we are with Key Stage 2. We've still got work to do around Key Stage 4 because the landscape is just more complicated when you've got a number of academies and a number of maintained schools. But we're kind of committed to doing everything we can to drive up the standards. I'll stop ranting.
Before I go to the other councillors, we want to regenerate this island. As an economy, we have a reasonably poor economy with very limited job options. If we want to regenerate this island, I have said for 10 years now, education is a tremendous part of that regeneration, because nobody is going to bring a workforce here if the schools cannot educate their children to a really good standard. The figures you just gave us now, have Hampshire or has anybody queried this new form of determining what scores there are? Because to me, this is theoretical desktop disaster. We're almost going back to the old matriculation system, and that shows my age, where you had five subjects and you had to get through all five of them, etc. And that was abandoned because it was stultifying. So it seems to me that the subjects that children take are being dictated almost by the D3. And that certainly does not suit the island, where we need many more hands-on people rather than the brain surgeons that go to Oxford or Cambridge. Anyway, I'll give you a chance to reply, and after that, Councillor Hastings had his hand up first.
I absolutely agree with the sentiments that education is at the heart of any community and the success of any community. We need to do everything we can to ensure that children get a really good deal for their education. I think the point you make about the new performance metrics around secondary schools is a really interesting one. And it's almost, because it is so complicated to understand what's going on there, there isn't yet the sort of groundswell that I would imagine that there should be. And the thing that I'm making sure that I do wherever I can is help people understand what the wrinkles are. Hence me, you know, people A, B and C, I've given outings to people's A, B and C in all sorts of places. I still come across head teachers who really don't understand the nuances around progress aims. So I'm making that as kind of, I'm sharing that with as many people as I possibly can, and because it's important everyone understands that. And it might just have been last week, I might just have mentioned it in passing to the Secretary of State, who kind of flinched a bit, but then kind of moved on. People need to understand what it is shown and what it is not shown. For me, it's showing something to do with the combinations of subjects as well as kind of school performance. And we need to be really clear on what it's demonstrating.
Councillor Hastings, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the lesson on testing for these rolling studies. I think that was really good and helpful to understand how it works. My question really was occurred to me. Would it make sense to teach that lesson to the children? Because A, it would improve their maths, and B, it might help them to make better choices.
And I guess it all comes down to what you mean by better choices. And that's for me at the heart of me. That's the dilemma. Because as a head, if the pressure's on you to improve your school, what are you going to do? You're going to actually stick lots of children into the EBAC subjects, narrow down the curriculum choices, and make sure everyone has done a significant number of EBAC subjects. And whether that is what they're interested in or the right or wrong thing for those children, that's the risk around progress as a measure. But people try and gain it, if you like, by actually putting children into a curriculum that isn't really about meeting the kind of kids' needs. And the place I go to is, particularly Key Sexual Curriculum, has to be all about children at that point where they kind of know where they want to go and what they've got desires and they can see an end to it all, and that's where they want to go. And I just worry that you can end up getting to a situation where, I wouldn't want him saying, you're going to do this amount of subjects because it's going to make my school look good, it's going to make us look good as a school. Because what I want to do as a head actually is what I'm trying to do is give you a life for the future. And if you're saying to me, these are the subjects I want to study, then if those are the things that are going to make you the person you want to be, then that's where you need to go with that kind of feedback. Options. For me, it raises the question, why bother saying to children you can have some options of subjects that you say for? You might as well just say, you're going to have a choice of three things. No, everyone's going to do this book, and you've got a choice of three things you can do. It's a debate that I think needs to happen, and it's a measure that came in without any debate. I don't think head teachers, education generally, kind of caught on to it quickly enough, and it's just appeared.
Yeah, so the other subject should be just about the school role that should capture the other person.
Absolutely.
Something needs to be done with that. Thank you.
Councillor Andrew.
Thank you, David, for that very, very clear explanation and for basically doing our job of scrutiny, I think.
Yeah.
I'm very confused here because if you look at the top-down approach with universities now, the number of subjects that you can actually do at university is, well, I think Southampton on recent visit with a Year 7 group, it was about 32,000. So to hear that there is this mechanism, as it were, that is constraining or it's promoting the narrowing down of the choices seems to me to be completely at odds with the pathway that our young people should be having, and in fact the options that are open to them later on in the system, surely that should be supporting it. And it's well documented that when young people are actually engaged and they're doing the subjects that they want to, that the attainment levels are higher. I mean, it's not rocket science. And I know through my work with the schools that timetabling is an absolute nightmare, but our schools, our secondary schools especially, do try as much as they possibly can to give those choices. So my question to you is, how can we actually help to highlight this and to change policy, if necessary?
Yes, I thank you for that question. Because it's a good question. The way we have to do it is the reason I raise it with you as politicians is because you're a politician and I'm just a legal officer. And it is about pursuing that through party policy and things like that. Because I think I'm quite clear in my mind that this is the machination of one man who has a view about what subjects are and what subjects aren't. And I think the more we can engage in a debate in the forum where it is appropriate to have this debate so that people understand what is being measured, that's what we all need to do here.
I just have one suggestion. Perhaps we as politicians could lobby to the RTA because they have a strong voice.
I think a couple of things really. I think your point about the LGA is well made. I think the LGA are very much onto this actually. They talk about the middle tier, which includes local authorities, but also there's an issue about regional schools commissions. David's right in one regard. There is to have a dialogue, you've got it so that we can see what. So that is a bit of an issue for us at the moment. We do take advantage of the opportunities that fall to us. So Council Raven and Brian were with the schools minister on Monday. And we made points about various things, findings of that sort of stuff. So we'll see whether we never quite know whether those things land and whether they then get recirculated back up. And if enough people say it, then it means we carry more weight. So we take the opportunity when we can. LGA is not a bad idea, and I think we also use all the contacts we have, both professionals and politicians, to try and build something.
Sorry, I was just going to say,
we're getting shorter time.
I just think that we should all support each other, and I think this is a great opportunity to do that.
Thank you.
Councillor
Cameron?
I think good. Does the government have some responsibility as well to encourage and to make a way ahead to sort of steer in the right direction?
And again, that's another group of people we need to be talking to help them understand exactly what is being measured and what is not being measured. You're absolutely right. But school governments need to understand this, and in a sense, that protects the school, if you like. Maybe protect is kind of overstated something. But in terms of bringing about kind of change and national debate, it is a lack of kind of
give a pressure on.
It is a political decision. But this is what the curriculum is, and this is how it's going to be measured.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Before I go to council, now.
I just really wanted to get some assurance. I presented as a secondary governors conference in Hampshire last week, and there were 150 secondary governors there, and pupil A, pupil B, and pupil C did make an appearance. And I think we'll be doing something similar on the island for secondary governors as well, so we'll match all that message.
Good analogy that was, yeah.
But I think in terms of simple adjustments that have been made, for me, if RE counted, as well as geography and history, that would be an awful big step forward. And I have brought that to the school minister before, but he doesn't like the content of the RE curriculum. That's where the company by firmly thinks that the history curriculum and the geography curriculum are more academic, and therefore the ones that should be in the EBAC, not RA. So how about that debate? I'm sure there's people that are in the same.
Thank you, Chairman. I honestly believe that we've had a problem. This is not new, we've had problems on the island. Ever since we changed over from the three-tier system to the two-tier system, for the simple reason that we decided that we could take middle school heads and spread them around as expertise within primary and secondary, and it's hard work to grab it back. I mean, I wish our teachers would have the enthusiasm that David's got there, because if we had 100 Davids here, we wouldn't have a problem. And the other thing is that on the island, we've got nothing to say to people. Look, we've got the youngsters there. It's like a mountain climbing. There's a mountain, you want to get to the top. Right, you see the top, you want to get there. But they don't see that. They don't see their future. I mean, I would personally like to see people who have succeeded in everyday life and say, look, you could be as good as these people if you worked hard at it. You know, but they can't see that now. They look around on the island and there's no paid jobs. What is their future? There is a future for every child. I mean, a number of young people on the island who have gone abroad to work is brilliant. But they've taken a step. If they stay here, what sort of jobs, what sort of future have they got? And we need people to come into the school to say, look, I worked hard, I've got this sort of job, I do this, I work on this, I make good money. Right? Yeah, you work on, you know, work, tell people what this, if they work hard, this is what you can do. You can have good money, you can have a nice car, you can go on holidays and all this sort of thing. They seem to be dragged down into this pit. They all stand and think, oh, why do I bother to work hard at school? Why should I have got no future? And they look at some of their parents and they haven't got a future either. They're all dragged down. I think these young people need building up. They need to be told, work hard, you can do well. And I think that's a shame that we don't do this.
It's
a
response.
Rob, you have a... Yeah, I just have a quick question about your experience with Ofsted, because obviously Ofsted made noise about curriculum in recent times. But do they acknowledge this particular issue in terms of when inspect teams are assessing standards and making judgments in schools? Has at all been acknowledged in the way in which they grade the forms of secondary schools? Obviously, that's going to impact on their teachers as much as we can. I'm interested in your experience there.
I can't answer both questions after the Councillor Hanson's response from your front. But firstly, yes, my experience of Ofsted has been taken as into account. So, for example, Gowers Enterprise College has got a good at Ofsted, yet only 13% of the children are into the background. Subjects. So clearly when that was expected, we've taken that combination of subjects into account. Ryde Academy, which again has got a good Ofsted, if you look at the attainment 8 buckets, they've got more like attainment 6 than attainment 8, and they're not doing all the combination of the 8 subjects. And again, Ofsted has taken that into account and said that's a good school. So our experience is that Ofsted are looking at the individual subjects and the progress children are making those, not just the combination of subjects that we've taken to. You've got to say, Councillor Howard, I think we've Yes, you're right, there are always a minority of students in any school that you need to inspire and you need to improve on with greater ambition. But my experience of going around secondary schools on the island is our schools are jam-packed full of children with bags full of ambition and really wanting to do the best that they can in their lives. I've come across, spent some time recently in Protestant, and I came across some of the most beloved, well-mannered, but really deeply thoughtful children. They were asking really interesting, deep, thoughtful questions, actually, that they were a credit to the island as I was talking about. I also think we've moved on now past the organisation of the table, as opposed between the schools and the high school. We've moved that kind of moment is gone. If you look at the leaders we've now got in secondary schools, they're not the people that were part of the middle schools. Actually, Julie O'Brien is the longest serving head teacher with 3 years experience on the island. That generation of leaders have moved on. And we've got a new generation with bags of secondary experience, not just middle school experience. And I think they are the right leaders that really want to cooperate and try for the education system on the island. I think we've got some really good people, some good teachers in place, the children that want to do really well. I think things are moving.
Chairman, could I just say one thing about that?
Could I just say, John, please keep it short.
It's very short. That it's very unfortunate for the Elsons on the island, unlike New Hampshire or places like that, that you're surrounded by universities. They can see the universities, they know what the universities do. People on the island really don't know much about how universities work or anything else, and I think that it would be very nice if we had the opportunity that the youngsters from the island can go and see the university.
Carry on, John.
Oh, right. I just feel that they need to know more about universities to know what their future would be. Thank you.
In fact, the Isle of Wight College, when they had their education fair, all the universities, when I went, they were all there, John.
Yeah.
It's a question of getting the children out there. However, I do thank Hannah Shear for your input. I presume you're all going to catch the same.
No, sorry, I misled you. I was a little late, but I'm going to leave you in the tendencies of Brian Merrick when you get on to the opposite
Yes, I think if we would members agree that we note the report, and that's really at this stage all we can do. Sorry?
It's quite clear, sorry.
Yeah, and we'll note the report, and in fact, if we then move on